From WYPR, I'm Sheila Kast. We're on the record. Baltimore welcomes a new discussion series that promises conversation with a purpose. It's called Great Talk. Co-founder Diane Davison gives us an overview, and we meet former national security executive and whistleblower Thomas Drake. He will headline the panel for the inaugural event next week titled Cyber Wars, The Secrets, The Spies. A few years into his tenure at the NSA, Drake brought concerns about wasteful spending and questionable surveillance to his superiors, but was thwarted.
The surreal part of this is I found myself defending the very Constitution that I had taken an oath four times to support and defend. I found myself defending it against my own government.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning. I'm Sheila Kast. We're On the Record. In a digital world where face-to-face conversation is a scarce commodity and threats of cyber attacks and security breaches permeate the headlines, Baltimore welcomes a new series of panel discussions that aims to address both topics. It's called Great Talk. Later in the show, we'll meet the co-founder of the series and get an overview. Joining us now by phone is former National Security Senior Executive and Whistleblower Thomas Drake. He will headline the panel at the Great Talk inaugural event called Cyber Wars, The Secrets, The Spies. It will take place Tuesday at the Micah Brown Center. A few years into his tenure at the NSA, Drake brought concerns about wasteful spending and questionable surveillance to his superiors, but was thwarted. Then he sent information to a Baltimore Sun reporter and was eventually charged on 10 counts, including espionage and obstruction of justice. After years of investigation, all the charges were dropped, and he eventually pled guilty to one misdemeanor count for exceeding authorized use of a computer. He is with us by phone to talk about his experience and more. Thomas Drake, welcome to On the Record.
Thanks for having me.
When you brought the information to the Sun reporter in 2006, did you ever dream it would set off the chain of events that it did?
Yes, because it really begins in terms of my getting caught up in a massive criminal leak investigation that was launched by the DOJ
in Department of Justice,
2005. And that was as a result of a New York Times article, front page above the fold, revealing for the first time publicly the existence of what was then referred to as the warrantless wiretapping program. I knew that when that article was published, and particularly when they launched a criminal leak investigation, that some of us would get caught up in it, and because there were so few people that knew about this super secret, approved by the president, domestic surveillance regime that was approved by President Bush formally the first week in October of 2001. Just a few short weeks after 9/11. And I happened to be a person who knew about that program and had actually blown the whistle over several years to multiple people within the government through proper and protected channels, up to and including the committees, the intelligence committees. In fact, I was actually a witness, a material witness, for two 9/11 congressional investigations.
So that whole canvas was clear to you, and yet you did make the decision to share information with a reporter.
Well,
take us into your thinking.
Well, in terms of the thinking, I mean, it is true. If you work for the national security establishment and you do sign what are called non-disclosure agreements, if you go to the press in an unauthorized manner, at a minimum, it's a violation of administrative policy, not necessarily criminal. I knew that by going to the press when I did, that I was effectively touching the third rail, and that the government could easily consider it to be the equivalent of espionage, as defined by the Espionage Act from World War I, 1917. I knew that. I was very familiar with what had happened to Daniel Ellsberg in the early 70s, who was considered to be the father of modern day whistleblowing.
Right, he leaked the Pentagon Papers.
Yeah, and was declared the most dangerous man in America by Kissinger at the time. They went after him with everything they had, and they charged him with espionage. He was actually the first American charged under the Espionage Act for non-spy activities. I was the second whistleblower charged in like manner. But I did so in the public interest. I mean, I was there on the playing field, as it were, but in the very, very secret side of the U.S. government, and I saw that under the cover of secrecy and national security, a whole lot of decisions were made at the highest, literally the highest levels of the government, that were in clear violation of the Constitution and the Fourth Amendment.
So you knew why you were doing it. You knew what was at stake from your perspective. As things started to unfold, did you ever think that you might not prove your innocence?
Yeah. I was fully prepared to go to prison. This is just like Ellsberg was. In fact, Ellsberg was quite surprised at the end because they actually was prosecuted misconduct, which led to throwing the case out by the presiding judge at the time. It went over 2 years. I knew I faced a very, very dire future. It was the signature case, by the way, ultimately prosecuted under the Obama administration, although the investigation had begun many years earlier. And yeah, I face a pretty dim future, and that future could in fact include many, many years in prison. I was fully prepared to go to prison if that was necessary. I certainly didn't want to go to prison. I certainly didn't do it to go to prison. Nothing that I did actually violated the law. It was simply an administrative policy that I violated. There's nothing criminal about going to the press. Here was the difference, though. I was going to the press with unclassified information. That was all proven in court later, toward the end of my ordeal in a federal district courthouse in downtown Baltimore. But I was going to the press with unclassified information about high crimes and misdemeanors as defined by the Constitution, up to and including the President of the United States, willfully violating the Constitution under the guise, cover, and color of national security. And that's also a violation of even executive branch statutes. You can't use the classification system or secrecy to cover up crimes that are actually committed by the state. But that's what happened. And by committing the truth, I was criminalized. I revealed, disclosed what the government considered to be a state secret, and therefore it was a crime, and so it was a crime against the state, and I faced 35 years in prison.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with Thomas Drake, former NSA senior executive and whistleblower, when he saw wasteful spending and questionable surveillance by his employer. He's also the 2011 recipient of the Reidenauer Prize for Truth-Telling. What has your life been like after this experience?
Well, it was the worst period of my life. I can't even begin to tell you. I mean, I was a very senior-ranking executive at the National Security Agency, and it's taken right out from under you. I was under the gun, for many, many years. It took them, from the time they began the investigation, it took 4 years before they actually charged me, something the judge took them to task for during the sentencing in July of 2011. Life has been quite different. I mean, I went from making a very good salary within five and a half years of retirement, given my military and other government background, having served my country faithfully, I've had to reconstruct my life and rebuild my life slowly over the intervening years. It's not always been easy.
It was 10 years ago this month, November 2007, that the FBI raided your home and as you say, turned your life upside down. Was the sacrifice worth it?
10 years ago on 20 November is when they raided, but I knew that was probably going to happen. I had had other former colleagues that had been raided several months earlier. I mean, this was an extraordinary criminal leak investigation. They went to the ends of the U.S. and beyond to find anybody who had leaked, quote-unquote, leaked anything about what was a mass domestic surveillance regime to the New York Times. And I was considered, in the end, to be the prime suspect, and they wanted to send a very, very chilling message, although I never went to the New York Times. I had gone to the Baltimore Reporter, and they wanted to make sure that that message was sent. And here they were criminalizing anybody who dared expose the truth about wrongdoing by the government. And, yeah, I can't, you know, it's hard to believe right now, you know, that it's been 10 years, you know, and I'm fully 5-6 years removed from having held off the government and kept my freedoms. They weren't, in the end, able to actually take them away. So I didn't end up in prison. I didn't end up paying a fine. And I went free. It was a plea agreement, as you mentioned earlier, for exceeding authorized use of a government computer. They're all felony counts are dropped on my terms as part of the plea deal. But the damage was enormous, and it certainly sent the most chilling of messages, and yet the press is involved. And this was a case of the government not wanting, in the public interest, you know, truth being told about what they were doing under the cover of secrecy and national security. And that's really what has happened in this post-9/11 world, and I felt I was not going to break faith or fidelity with the oath that I had taken to support and defend the Constitution. The surreal part of this is I found myself defending the very Constitution that I had taken an oath 4 times to support and defend. I found myself defending it against my own government.
Do you think the climate has changed since you were at the NSA with regard to what is acceptable surveillance in the name of national security?
Well, it's in the name of. I mean, you invoke almost in religious terms, national security, and anything pretty much goes. It's become normalized. The idea that we just need the data was really the mantra in the early years. I was certainly had become all too familiar with the extraordinary scope in terms of depth and breadth of the surveillance regime, which metastasized over the intervening years. And some of us did our best from within the system to bring light to it. But clearly, it was a decision made at such a high level by the president himself that they were going to protect it at all costs. So anybody who dared expose it was no doubt going to pay a very heavy price. You know, I was certainly one of those who did. In fact, I'm the only person to date in relationship to the surveillance program that was, you know, summarily indicted and prosecuted for having done what? Blown the whistle on the program, both within and without. And my crime, the crime, and I put crime in quotes here, my crime was actually going to the press. And even though it was proven in the courtroom that none of the information that ultimately was published, even by the reporter at the time with the Baltimore Sun, was any of it was classified, all unclassified, the damage had been done. But yeah, life has not been the same, and you know, I pinch myself pretty much every morning to say, wow, I'm free.
What would you like people to come away with from the Great Talks discussion on Tuesday?
Well, you can't take freedom or liberty for granted. A lot of people have sacrificed their lives and their fortunes and even their honor for this thing we call freedom and liberty. And it's like every generation has to reconnect to what that means. The reason I say you can't take it for granted, there's certainly people and forces that want to restrict those freedoms and liberties, and history's not kind. There's nothing that provides the United States some kind of get-out clause or an exception to sort of the darker sides of history. History is replete with examples, right, of what happens. And we're not immune from history at all. I would like people to take away that the very air you breathe, of the liberty you're inside of, the pursuit of happiness, those extraordinary inalienable rights that are actually stated in the Declaration of Independence do mean something. It's that they're not just words. They give our very life. They give rise to our very life as sovereign human beings. And yet in this kind of post-9/11 world, the concerns, and this is, you know, part of raising the alarm as a whistleblower in the public interest in terms of civic society, is the trend lines are moving away from democracy. They tend to be less democratic and more autocratic, more authoritarian. And some of us had significant concerns, you know, as this got normalized. I think some people thought Bush was an aberration, that Obama would try to turn things around, but he just extended it with a couple of minor exceptions. The concern was, what would happen if someone like Trump came along, or the equivalent? You know, you have a president who's actually declared at least parts of the media and the press as the enemy of the people. I mean, I just shudder when I hear that kind of language. So the public interest, right, is also our own individual interest. You know, we don't live alone and live apart. We live in a society. And I keep asking people, you know, what future do you want to keep? I think it's a core question we must face and also answer at the same time.
I really appreciate your talking to us. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thomas Drake, former NSA senior executive and whistleblower. He will headline the panel discussion, Cyber Wars, the Secrets, the Spies, the first of the Great Talk series, next Tuesday, December 5th at 7 p.m. at the Micah Brown Center. We have a link to tickets and information at the On the Record page, WYPR.org. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Quick break, and then we'll hear more about the Great Talk series from its co-founder. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Cyber Wars, the Secrets, the Spies is the title of the first offering of a new series of panel discussions that will kick off Tuesday at Micah's Brown Center. It's called Great Talk. We spoke earlier with a speaker who will headline the first discussion, Thomas Drake, former NSA senior executive and whistleblower, who made public wasteful spending and questionable surveillance by his employer. To learn more about what the series will offer, we're joined now by a co-founder of the series, Diane Davison. Welcome to On the Record, Diane.
Thank you.
Why did you decide to start a new discussion series?
My co-founder, Claudine Davison, and I felt that there was a need for a lecture series that was not necessarily aimed at a particular community with a particular agenda, because that's more common in what you see, whether it be a religious institution that has a lecture series, or some other organization that is aiming it at their particular community. We felt there was a need for an open discussion with conversation with people face-to-face from all walks of life, diverse, and that wasn't aimed with a single speaker necessarily, but was a conversation among people and that then exchanged with the audience as well.
What are the topics that we can look forward to?
We started the first series with five topics. They range from the cyber wars, secrets, and spies, to We the People, a crisis of identity, Star Trek, technology, innovations, and ideas, truths, myths, and breakthroughs in medical and cancer research, and the last one is Into Music, the Lines, the Heat, the Business. We tried to cover a vast area of interest.
There is a range, but there also seems to be kind of, maybe not an emphasis, but a lot of attention to technology and cyber questions.
It ended up that way. And when we were developing the topics a year ago, it wasn't even in the headlines as much. It somehow evolved that way. And you can see somewhat of a thread going through a few of the topics. But I'm hoping that with the diverse panels that we have, that they will broach also areas that are outside of just the technology side, because some of these topics are quite robust and can involve much more than just the actual cyber technology aspect of it, but more the societal things.
So let's pick up on next week as an example. In addition to Thomas Drake, who's going to be participating?
So we actually, in addition to Thomas Drake, have two professors who are experts in cybersecurity and teach courses on that, as well as moderator Dana Priest, who's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist who has spent the majority of her career focusing on national security, military operations, and U.S. intelligence agencies.
At the Washington Post.
Yeah, at the Washington Post. So we're hoping that that will be a panel that can really get into the meat of things that are going on now, starting with the whistleblower aspects, you know, that predate the current era, but then go into the Russian hacking and even the recent revelations about Uber that just came out. And, you know, it's permeating our apps. It's permeating our everyday. It used to be cyber wars and all that used to be something far off that governments did. But now it's starting to affect us as citizens in somewhat of our daily lives. And we're starting to see it more regularly.
Is there an advisory board that is figuring out these topics and who should address them?
Yeah, we are an organization that is really a partnership of Maryland institutions. And those institutions, we really made an effort to get representatives from all those partners on our advisory board, as well as people from different walks of life. So we really make it fully accessible to all different types of people. So we have everybody from Morgan Showalter, a Baltimore City public school teacher who's on the Maryland Commission on Excellence and Innovation, to Ellis Brown at Morgan State University, Bill Eggington, who's the director of the Johns Hopkins University Humanities Institute. We brought in the Chesapeake Arts Center and so have its executive director, Belinda Huseman, on the advisory board. We really were interested in getting a lot of points of views.
That's Diane Davison here on the record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cash. She is co-founder of Great Talk, Conversations with a Purpose, a new series starting this month. Who do you hope attends?
We hope to bring in a very diverse group of people. And from a lot of different age groups. I think traditionally a lot of lecture series bring in somewhat of an older crowd and not usually teenagers, students, college students, high school students. We would love to see that, and that is one of the reasons we use venues that include colleges and secondary schools, so that they have an opportunity to attend the series and not just experience things through a screen on their phone or their tablet or their computer, but actually experience conversation live and get to possibly participate. We are trying to encourage that.
So the first offering is at MICA, but they will not all the panel discussions will be at the Brown Center?
No, every talk is at a different venue, a different partner venue. And our partners include Maryland Public Television, where the second talk will be. The third talk will be at Friends School of Baltimore. The fourth talk will be at the Maryland Science Center. And the last talk will be at Morgan State University.
So it's a movable feast.
Yes, it is.
The tagline is conversations with a purpose. What do you mean by that?
Well, obviously the conversation part, we've been emphasizing that it is not just somebody speaking at you or lecturing, doing a TED Talk kind of thing, but a full conversation. And then we felt there, you know, it was a purpose that it be a prescient topic to some degree and something that affects people in their daily lives and would be of interest in that regard, and not just, you know, let's say somebody talking about their biography that just came out, but really topics, not, you know, whether it's political, social, moral, arts, culture, but topics that affect people in their lives.
And how does the format, you stress conversation, typical lecture is a speaker or speakers talking to an audience for some period of time and then a Q&A period. What will your format be?
Well, we're going to have a panel. It's usually 3, 4, or 5 people and a moderator who are amongst themselves having the conversation first and really not preparing it ahead of time. So it's not like they're just hitting talking points. They are fully having a conversation in front of the audience and then with the audience asking questions and participating. And then after that panel discussion is over and that conversation is over, it carries on to afterwards. We're always going to have a reception afterwards with the speakers attending, and so that everybody in the audience can continue the conversation in a less formal setting.
Thank you for telling us about it. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Diane Davison is co-founder of Great Talk, Conversations with a Purpose. We spoke earlier with Thomas Drake, former NSA senior executive and whistleblower. He will headline the first talk of the series, Cyber Wars, The Secrets, The Spies, next Tuesday, December 5th, 7 p.m. at the Micah Brown Center. We have a link to ticket and more information at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm so glad you've been listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.